High school action to the birds and the pros with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion. WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. That is an homage to our good friend Leo Stauder, usually the voice you hear on the show first, but not tonight. We've banished him to the far-off lands of West Lafayette, Indiana, as he will be calling the Illinois State volleyball team as they make their fourth straight appearance in the NCAA tournament. So for the first half of the show, it's just going to be me and our lovely
producer, Joe Kennedy.
And it's, you know what?
It's nice. I don't want to say that, but it's like we have no rules right now, you know?
Well, so, okay, so it's first of
our
context.
Boss isn't
Leo.
Here.
Leo is the sports director here at WZND, so he's kind of the boss. He's the boss man around here. And so we're kind of, it's kind of no holds barred. Joe and I are going to be,
we can say whatever you want.
We're going to be loose cannons for the first, for the first 30 minutes or so of this show. But I think it's going to be a good one. We're going to be talking a lot of NCAA before we get to hear from Leo and the rest of the crew who are at Purdue right now. They're watching some volleyball. They're going to get to call some volleyball and hopefully the Redbirds come away with a win. But before we talk about the Redbirds, Joe, big weekend.
Oh, yeah.
A big week for NCAA basketball. I think after the Big Ten ACC Challenge, you can say that NCAA basketball is back.
Yeah, it definitely is back. And a lot of big games have happened because this is our first time talking about NCAA basketball. And right now, Duke losing as the number one ranked team in the nation to Ohio State after they just beat Gonzaga just a couple weeks before then. It was big because Duke came into this one. A lot of people were picking Duke easily, just straight up and everything. But Ohio State, they pulled back into the game. They're down 13 at halftime. But thanks to Zed Key, their forward, who put up 20 points, he was really dominating in the post against a couple of the players on Duke, like Mark Williams. He's one of their paint protectors. And Mark Williams did a really good job against Gonzaga, Drew Timmy, Chet Holmgren. But they just couldn't really stop Zed Key in this game. And then E.J. Liddell had a very, very clutch shot. And it's just always awesome to see the number one team go down, especially when it's a Big Ten school, you know, local around here, Big Ten area we are in. Obviously, MVC first, though. You got to put them in there.
Valley runs deep, baby.
But the Valley runs deep. But Ohio State did a great job. And then another Big Ten school, their arch rival, Michigan, Joey, they lost by 21 points to North Carolina. North Carolina is a team, very interesting team. They're 5-2 now, but they had a couple big players step up, like Caleb Love, who had a good year last year, his freshman season. But this time he was able to put up a good points in this game where he put up 22, a leading score of everyone. And then their transfer, Dawson Garcia, their forward, a lot of teams are after him, and he really made the game. He really gave the North Carolina Tar Heels the edge in this one.
Yeah, so okay, so the first game that you mentioned, we'll go one by one. Ohio State and Duke.
Yeah.
Great game. And
it was so fun to watch.
And looking, so Duke came in, like you said, they came in number one. But they just had a lot of guys who didn't perform up to where they had been. You talked about Mark Williams, only 8 points and seven rebounds. Paolo Banchero with only 14 points. So these guys who they've been relying on a lot this season kind of just underperformed. Where do you think this puts them nationally? Because I don't think after you lose to an unranked Ohio State, you're going to be ranked number one anymore.
Yeah, I think the clear-cut number one right now is Purdue. Purdue's just been able to win every single game they've been put in, and they've been doing really well this year. They were put in second ranked team in the nation. Now with Duke losing, I think that easily opens up that spot for Purdue at the moment. And you got to, Duke still is a very good team. I could see them just dropping down to number two. It could be interesting, though, Gonzaga number three, even though Duke did just beat Gonzaga. Gonzaga has some better losses, I guess, compared to Duke. So it's going to be interesting to see how that unwinds. But that game for Ohio State, they were just firing on all cylinders at the end of the game. They really were able to come back into that one. And it was fun to watch. And it was so fun to see the court being stormed by all the fans. Definitely missed that last year with all the COVID and everything. There's no fans at all. And that, I feel like that's a big difference in this game, that Duke had to go away as a number one team to a team that was unranked in Ohio State. And I think the fans played a very big part in that, and that's going to just keep on happening this season.
And you know I'm a big fan of my good old mid-major teams.
Oh, yeah.
So I was watching my boy. Only 2 minutes of playing time for Ohio State, but Jimmy Sotos, okay. the transfer from Bucknell.
Yeah.
I was just excited to see him get a little bit of playing time. He gets some attention online because people make fun of him because he models on the side.
Oh,
right?
He's a little model?
Well,
huh?
I mean, if you got the looks for it,
yeah.
you can't hate the kid.
And with all the NIL stuff, I mean,
exactly.
Go get your modeling done, you know, flexing some Ohio State gear, you know,
exactly.
Come from Bucknell, who Illinois State just beat a couple weekends ago. That was a big game for the Redbirds and everything. But we're going to talk about the Redbirds in a little bit, but just recapping kind of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. The Big Ten did win. It was interesting because at first the Big Ten was kind of, they were up, I believe, 5-1 in the challenge, like five wins compared to just the one win for ACC. But then the ACC started to come back with some big wins, most notably that Michigan game. So let's talk about that Michigan game a little bit. I mean, Michigan, it's an interesting team. They got two five-stars who came in, Diabate and then Houston. They both did pretty well, I would say, against North Carolina. Diabate was their best player by far in that game, put up 13 points. And on defensive end also, he's a tough player to go up against on the offense. And Michigan, though, just, I don't know, there's something about it right now. They're 4-3, but their losses have come against some good teams, Seton Hall, North Carolina. But it's just, these guys had expectations to be like a top number one team even in the country this year, and now they're going to be unranked. So.
And I think that it is just a little bit early to completely close the book on Michigan. Like you were talking about, Musa Diabate is insane, dude.
Yeah.
He is so good. And so I think if you have a player like that, it's impossible to count out a team with that kind of talent. And they, like you said, they've got Caleb Houston. I really like Devontae Jones. So they've got a lot of guys. But I believe blue.
Yeah.
I'm a blue blood.
You're a blue blood.
I bleed Carolina blue.
Yeah.
And so it was awesome to see this team who had a disappointing year last year. They never really found a way to put all the pieces together. They had the talent last year.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was sort of a rebuilding year, I still thought they could have been really good. But then in the tournament, a disappointing loss to Wisconsin, they fell. It was overall not a great showing for them. So this is a really nice way to kind of reestablish themselves. Like you said, Michigan has all this hype behind it this season. For UNC to be able to come out here and say, put their stake in the ground and say, we took care of business against this ranked team that has these top five-star recruits, I think that's super important for this team to kind of get their swagger back almost.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, especially with North Carolina losing Roy Williams, their legendary head coach, and they're already off to a couple of good wins this season. I mean, they were ranked in the, I believe they were in a top 15 team, couple not so good losses, I would say, but they were able to rebound with this Michigan game, and that was a big one at home and everything. And it's always fun to watch a game when it's in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. And if you look at the games that UNC has lost, you've got number two Purdue, who will quickly be number one Purdue after that Duke loss, and then number 13 Tennessee. And
okay.
Tennessee,
yeah.
They're no slouch this year.
Yeah.
They look really good.
Yeah.
So not terrible losses. I think it's only a matter of time before UNC is ranked. They go up against December 18th. They go up against UCLA.
Okay.
I think if they can win that game or keep it very, very close, that is going to work really well in their favor, because heading up to that game, you have Georgia Tech, Elon, and Furman. So that's no really big prove yourself games there.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun year, I think, in college basketball, especially with Gonzaga losing that game to Duke. I mean, I still think the top three teams right now, even with that Duke loss, I think it's going to be Duke, Purdue, Gonzaga are just level above the rest. But Baylor also at the moment, they're still undefeated. They're at 7-0, one of the few undefeated teams left inside the top 10. And there's also just some interesting ones like Arizona. Arizona's a team that beat Michigan, and they've got a couple other big losses. And then they got a couple big games still coming up against Power 5 teams. And I think it's just going to wrap out around to a fun year all around NCAA. And even now in the Missouri Valley Conference, Joey, because the Redbirds last night had a very big win. You know, Missouri State is no slouch of a team. That's one of the top four teams, I believe, expected in the Missouri Valley Conference preseason standings. And for them to get that win, it was just a great game. They were down, came back a little bit, and they just were hanging in there. We talked about it earlier, how this team last year, you know, they're losing in the first half. They kind of go away, and they're like, oh, they kind of give up. But this team, they're fun to watch. Like, this energy and the way they're just running on the court, you just see effort out there that you haven't seen in the past 2 years.
They took care of business against Missouri State. That game was incredible to watch. And Missouri State, like you said, they are a very good team in this conference. Isaiah Mosley is one of the best players in the Valley.
Yeah.
They held him 5 of 17 shooting last night. He only had 12 points. He was basically a non-factor. Gage Prim
went off.
Gage Prim had to get all the points because the defense that Illinois State was playing was making Isaiah Mosley completely useless. Mm-hmm. They completely took him out of the game. And then on the other side, where you have ISU getting a bunch of different contributors, obviously Antonio Reeves, who was snubbed from any preseason accolades, is making a lot of the people who make those decisions look kind of dumb right now. He's been incredible. And then you had Josiah Strong off the bench with 21. You had Mark Freeman with 10. You had Cy Chatman with 10. And so you're getting double-digit contributions from up and down your lineup, from the bench, from your starters. That is just so much heart and grit in this team that nobody expected anything of.
Yeah, and their three-point shooting, too, just kept them in this. I mean, if you look at Antonio Reeves, 4 for 5 from the three-point line. Josiah Strong, 5 of 8. Mark Freeman, 2 of 3. They shot 13 of 23 from the three-point line, and that's going to win you games, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference, where Missouri State goes 7 of 25 from behind the line. So a big difference became from that three-point strike. And this Illinois State team, Joey, they're sitting at 4-4 with games against Jackson State, Chicago State, and Quincy before they meet up with MAC Action, Ball State. So I think very well they could be a 7-4, maybe 6-5 squad, over 500 when they meet up against Ball State coming up. And then later on, eventually take on those Badgers up north. I mean, who knows about that one? But
yeah,
still.
That'll be a little bit of a scary one for Dan Mueller's squad. But I think one of the most important things to realize about this game, this was an overtime win against a conference opponent. So this is a very important game. I don't know why the Valley is doing this one random game. All the teams have it. They've just got one.
I think like a lot of conferences kind of do that now.
But I mean, I don't mind it. Yeah. I think it's like a cool little tease. But the Birds basically went 7 deep in this game. They had Antonio Reeves, Mark Freeman, Kendall Lewis, Howard Fleming, Ryan Schmidt, nice to see him get some minutes, Josiah Strong, and Cy Chatman. And then you had Liam McChesney and Iman Washington get less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So they really only played 7 guys, and they were able to win this game against a good conference opponent in overtime. I think that's so impressive. Once you can establish a couple of more of these guys, like Iman Washington's a guy who's proven himself. Mm-hmm. So once you can get more of these guys established and you've got that deep bench, and we were kind of hating on this team. By we, I mean I.
Yeah.
I did not have a whole lot of expectations coming in. But I think they're going to prove me wrong. Yeah, I think this is going to be a great team.
What I've kind of thought going into the season, I was kind of like, you know, I'm just going to go with the flow. Because when we talked about it, I was like, they're better than they were ranked the last team in the Missouri Valley Conference
by
in the preseason.
A wide
by
margin.
About like 60 votes.
It was kind of ridiculous.
It was by a lot. Like, everyone had no expectations at all around the Missouri Valley Conference for this team. And for ISU to beat Missouri State, maybe people are starting to turn their eye like, ooh. Okay, they put up some points. Antonio Reeves is for real. And, I mean, Mark Freeman, he's so quick. Like, watching the game, he's just quicker than everybody by a large fashion. I mean, this guy is quick, and he can create a shot better than I feel like any player on Illinois State. He can create a shot off the ball, and he can also create it with it with the ball, either from the mid-range. He has a good three-point stroke as well, and he can get to the rack for a guy who's pretty small.
And I think one of the things that this team has lacked in the last 5 years is, regardless of their skill level, because there have been some teams who have a lot of skill, there have been some teams who have been lacking in that department, regardless, they haven't really had the heart. They would get to the conference tournament, they'd get to Arch Madness, right? And they would just kind of flame out. Yeah. Even when the teams were good with Phil Fain and Keyshawn Evans and Malik Yarborough, they would go down there after a really good season and they would just flame out and they would lose in disappointing fashion.
Yeah.
And we would all be disappointed. I think this team is the opposite of that. I think they lack a little bit of that skill, that high-end talent that team had, but this team plays with so much more grit.
And you got to give credit now to Dan Mueller. As much as we were ragging on him before, and a lot of fans are ragging on him, like, this guy, maybe the team isn't the talent-wise he wants, but it's the team that has the heart, I feel like, that he wants on this squad. And that's important. Like, you ask coaches, I mean, I'm sure it's probably not true. You'd rather have a team full of guys that have the grit, work ethic, and heart than the talent. But overall, you really want both. But I mean, I feel like Dan Mueller right now and his squad, they have a squad that has a heart, that maybe some areas, not the talent, but there is definitely still a lot of talent on this team. And I feel like they're only going to get better as the season goes along. I mean, they're going to play some tough teams on Missouri Valley Conference, so that might end up affecting them down throughout the stretch of the season and everything. But I think it's going to be a more fun year than expected for Illinois State.
So, Joe, like you were talking about, a couple more games for the Birds before they get into conference play. No game is guaranteed. I'm just going to say a couple less challenging games.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson State, Chicago State, Quincy, and then Ball State, the University of Texas, San Antonio, and then the last game before conference play starts up again at Wisconsin. That might be tough.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think that the Birds have a really good shot of getting a lot of momentum behind them. And even if they can hang tough with Wisconsin, I think if you do that and then go play Valparaiso, I think that's a really
Wisconsin,
that's a really good way to start the conference.
Wisconsin will be an interesting one. But Loyola Chicago, Loyola Chicago, though, is also a tournament team that's been pretty far in the tournament the past couple of seasons, but they beat Wisconsin earlier in the year in a scrimmage before the season started. The Roadrunners, UTSA, don't know much about them.
Good football team this year.
They've been ranked in the top 25. Ball State's usually been a pretty decent program in the MAC, but the MAC isn't really that great of a basketball conference. And then our guys at Chicago State, Joey, we did a broadcast last year, I believe, against Chicago State.
That was our first broadcast back.
Yeah.
So that'll be a fun game. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some college football action. We got a lot of conference championship games coming up. We're going to give you what we think. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And we are back on The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation. We just talked about some NCAA basketball. Now we're moving to some NCAA football.
Yes, sir.
And Joe, this has been quite the week. There's a lot of championship stuff coming up, but then I don't think I have lived through a period where there's been so much off-the-field drama. Yeah. Like, it's been insane. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with the coaching carousel because, I mean, the only thing I've seen like this is in the video game NCAA Football 14. Because, like, in that game...
Great game, by the way.
You see coaches leaving, going everywhere. You're like, what is even going on? And just like in real life right now, Lincoln Riley is like, yeah, you know what? I'll lose in the Bedlam game against Oklahoma State. I'm off to USC. I want some of the beaches. Brian Kelly, he's stuck in Indiana. He's like, you know what? I want to go down to Louisiana. I'm tired of this stuff here in Notre Dame. So now he's at LSU. Mark Freeman now takes over at Notre Dame. And then you also have a ton of coaches just getting bank and money, especially Mel Tucker, Michigan State. He got paid. He's there, going to be there until at least 2027, 2028, I believe so. And it's just weird because Lincoln Riley and both Kelly, these guys, they never really told anyone anything. Like, then they both say it kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know how much to believe. I mean, you can't lie that much about it. So I guess I do kind of believe about it, but they just picked up their bags, said bye to their players, and they were out of there.
And so we can talk about these guys one at a time. This Lincoln Riley situation was kind of the first needle to drop or the ball to drop, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because he left for USC, and then you find out how much money USC is giving him. Mm. They're not only giving him that massive contract, they're buying him a house in LA. They bought his houses in in Oklahoma
yeah.
above their value.
Yeah.
So it's like he's getting all these bonuses.
In a private jet for him and his family that they can use whenever.
Nuts. It's it's insane.
What booster has this money?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I guess it's USC, so it makes sense. Like, yeah. It's LA. But, oh, my goodness. And see, here's the worst part about it is because, like, everybody, including myself, it's like, well, that sucks for the players. Like, they gave you this
fans,
loyalty.
Yeah.
Like, you should have a certain amount of loyalty to at least stay to the end of the year. But,
yeah,
they're giving him a private jet.
So much money. And, like, going from Oklahoma to
That's
California.
What I'm saying. Like I mean, it sucks. It sucks, yeah. And he shouldn't have done it. And it was an a-hole move.
Yeah.
But it's understandable.
What I like about the situation that arose from this is Bob Stoops, their former coach, who's been doing college football pregame, like Fox Noon kickoff and everything. He's been doing that. He came back, talked to all the players at Oklahoma. He's like legendary coach, won national championships and everything. And right now he's their interim head coach. He quit everything, not quit. He put aside Fox Sports right now just because he loves Oklahoma so much. So he came to Oklahoma now and he's been out recruiting and everything. He's not even the head coach. He's just there for a month or two more months. He's just doing this out of passion and love. And so he's trying to keep Oklahoma there because the way Lincoln Riley left it, I mean, all these recruits are decommitting, now committing to USC and everything. Players are transferring out of Oklahoma, and they're kind of just shell-shocked. But I liked what Bob Stoops said. It's no man is bigger than the program of Oklahoma. And that's true because they've had this kind of happen before. It's been a long time. They usually have coaches that stay a while because coaches really don't leave Oklahoma. Like, that's a top program in the country. But in the day of money now, like, anything's possible. Anyone will go anywhere. Like,
And
Saban might go to Wisconsin exactly. Whitewater if he gets offered $20,000 million or whatever.
Wisconsin Whitewater's got that kind of money, but yeah. Bob Stoops kind of did Lincoln Riley in, because when you are the predecessor to this, like, or you are the successor to this legendary coach in Bob Stoops,
yeah.
That is the amount of loyalty that Bob Stoops quitting everything and coming back because he loves his team. That's what the fans expect and the players expect. So when you dip on them like that, it really just compounds the fact that you left in a scumbag way. You now are disappointing this fan base who is accustomed to so much better. And so Lincoln Riley really kind of screwed the pooch on that one. And going from a school with great coaches and great football heritage to another school with great football tradition.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame.
Yeah, that was weird too. It's just like he's won the most games ever at Notre Dame and everything. And then he just picks up, goes to LSU. And I feel like it's the same type of thing, though. It's the money. It's all about the money.
This one blows me away because when you think about it, think about in the past 30 years or even 50 years, there are not many jobs in coaching more valuable than the coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Yeah.
Like, there is such a legacy that comes with that I don't understand why, even if Brian Kelly wants to leave, if he's not happy, if he wants to be down at LSU, why would you leave in the middle of the season when your team is, like, what, fifth?
I know, that's the part that doesn't make – they literally can make the college football playoff.
It's ridiculous.
And he just
me.
Decided to get up and leave because he thinks he has a better chance
and
to win at LSU.
And he's never won a title at Notre Dame.
No, yeah.
This is as close as you've been in the last 5 years. Why now? Are
you
leaving?
Yeah, exactly, because you're going up and, like, you have a chance to make it. I mean, it's very possible that, I mean, maybe Michigan loses to Iowa.
And I mean, what's it
worth? We're going to talk about it in just a little bit, but it's just why. But I think a big reason of it, because Notre Dame and their academics is such a big, big priority. Like, they don't always get the top recruits because of the academics and everything. And at LSU, it's a little different academic standard. So, I mean, maybe that has to do it because you don't always see a lot of five stars going to Notre Dame and everything. But LSU, you always do see it. And just the coaching is just a little different. So I think that's a big thing. But and going back to kind of Lincoln Riley, too, and everything, why these coaches are leaving right now is, I think, just because of the whole recruiting. This is like a big part of recruiting right now. It's recruiting season. Signing day is coming up in just a little bit. So they're just trying to get their recruits to come to their new program and get the ones that they had maybe at Notre Dame or Oklahoma and flip them.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling that these coaches would leave these esteemed programs halfway through the season, especially Brian Kelly and Notre Dame. But let's talk about, we're talking about teams making playoff pushes. We got championship week coming up.
Yes, sir.
Let's do some picks because we're done. We're done with the pick six. Our, rest in peace, the pick six. If you want to know the standings, that's too bad. I'm not going to tell you. All you have to know is that Joe Kennedy won. Leo got second place, and we don't have to talk about it.
No, we're
going to
talk about it. So Joe Kennedy won 42-24, first place. Leo Stoddard, 40-26 in second place. The guest and Steve Cease tied for third at 39-27. Shout out to the guest this season because this is something we've never seen ever in Red Zone history. All my 4 years I've been here, guests have always below 500 and all that hoopla and everything. But Joey Dwyer finishes the year 32-34 in fifth place. I mean, could have been a lot better from you, Joey, but
all I'm saying
is
the Bears sewered me.
Yeah, I mean, you're the one who picked that. You literally have a Bears record for every Bears game, so that's like how many 7-3, 10-3 losses, yeah. I guess, for you, maybe, yeah, in that category. But it was a fun one. I think three up, three down is going to be a lot more fun.
I'm ready for three up, three down.
Thought goes into that.
Before we get there, we're just going to go over some picks for conference championship week in NCAA football. Because it should be a good time. So, first of all, Joe, everybody's favorite conference. We got a little maction going on. Kent State at versus Northern Illinois. Who do you got?
I'm going to go with Northern Illinois because I got to stay home. Casper Rokevitz going right up to Northern Illinois, so maybe he'll be in the game. Probably not. I'm kidding. He just transferred there. But I got to respect my Huskies. Rocky Lombardi, former Spartan dog out in Michigan State, throwing for 532 yards and 3 touchdowns in the first meet against these two teams. So I'm going to go with the Huskies.
I'm also going with the Huskies. Steve and Leo both picked Kent State. A couple of clowns.
I don't like that.
So it's whatever. We're over it. Now let's go to the Pac-12. We got number 10, Oregon, number 13, Utah.
I like Utah in this one. They've really came out, and after the start of their season, I believe they went 1-2 or 1-3. And since then, they've been one of the best teams in college football, even. I mean, if this college football playoff, maybe next year it will be, was a 12-team playoff, this Utah team is a team you definitely do not want to be playing right now. Got good defense on the side, and their offense has been picking up, too. So I'm going Utah.
I'm also going to go Utah for basically the same reasons you said. I really like the fact that they were able to rebound after a tough start, and I just haven't been really.
Oregon,
exactly. Oregon's just
after that Ohio State win. It's just like, what are they doing?
What have they done? it's a real what have you done for me lately kind of situation
exactly.
with Oregon. All right, let's go to the Big Ten: Michigan and Iowa. And I saw a video about a way that Iowa could get in to the college football playoff.
That too, but that's
and
no way
it's
that's happening.
A bunch of stuff has to happen, but one of the things that has to happen is Iowa has to beat number 2 Michigan. Is it happening, Joe?
I don't think it's happening at all. I'm sorry, but Iowa's just not put up for it. I mean, you never know though. I mean, but the way their offense works, I just don't see it happening against Michigan's defense, and Michigan's offense just a lot better than Iowa's. So I got to go Michigan as much as it pains me.
I'm a good old Iowa boy from good old Bettendorf, the 5-6-3, but I can't pick them. Michigan is just too good.
Yeah,
Michigan's
good call,
too good. Whether it was going to be Michigan or it was going to be Ohio State, Iowa was going to get pumped regardless.
Yep.
All right, let's move on now. We got Baylor and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State number 5. Baylor number 9 in the nation. Joe, who do you got?
Yeah, I'm going Cowboys, Oklahoma State. Big win out of Bedlam. Baylor, though, is an interesting team, too. They've gotten some big wins at Oklahoma as well. And Iowa State was a big win in that one. But I think the Cowboys are going to hold off in this. And their defense, it's usually been their offense throughout their history, but their defense is just top-notch right now.
Yeah, I think OSU takes this easily. Not really a whole lot to add to what you got. Let's go to the SEC. This one's going to be interesting. Number 1, Georgia, the undefeated Bulldogs, going up against Alabama.
See, I still don't even know, but I really want Georgia. I am tired of Alabama. I think the whole entire country, this is the point of the season where everyone's just going against Alabama. No one wants them, and that just fuels the empire down south with Nick Saban and them. Like, they love that type of stuff. They put it up all over their locker rooms, everything, but I got to go Georgia. I cannot go with Alabama.
Yeah, I can't pick Georgia. Like you said, just in good faith, I just can't pick
Alabama, you mean?
Sorry. I have to clear my throat. I got a lot going on, Joe. But no, I'm not going to pick Alabama, even if I think they have the slightest chance to win. I just don't want to see them win. I want to see them miss the college football playoff this year.
I don't think they've ever missed it. Yeah, so
I would be interested.
I feel like if they even lose, the community still might put them in.
Well, here's my thing. First, let's talk about it because this has to factor into it. Houston and Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Houston, they went on a 2-game losing streak earlier in the season, and since then, they have been a very good team in the AAC. But I think Cincinnati is just the team of destiny, and I want them to get in there, a Group of Five team, non-power conference team. So I'm going to keep going with the Bearcats, even though upset of Houston would shake things up a lot. Even if Alabama were to lose and Houston were to lose, Bama still might sneak in, but Oklahoma State, who knows? This is one of the best years that we've had of college football, like at the end of the down at the wire.
So I'm riding with the Bearcats too. Like you said, Group of Five school, want to see them in,
mm-hmm.
but ways that Alabama could miss, right? So if Georgia takes them down, Georgia's going to stay number one. Then you have Michigan beating Iowa, they'll stay number two. If Cincinnati beats Houston, Houston's ranked number 21 right now, and Alabama loses, and Oklahoma State beats Baylor, do Cincinnati and Oklahoma State jump over Alabama? You've got 3-4-5.
So you said Cincinnati won.
You've got 3-4-5 right now. So you've got Alabama 3, Cincinnati 4, Oklahoma State 5 right now going into conference championship week. If Alabama loses and Oklahoma State and Cincinnati both win,
both of them are in.
Does that bump Alabama out of the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think it would go Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame hanging on right there, Alabama probably at 6 or 7 maybe. And I think that's just how it would go, but if Alabama, Cincy, Oklahoma State all lose, then I think Notre Dame is a team that gets in at that number 4 spot. And then who knows who also gets in at that number 3 spot if Alabama ends up losing too. So, I mean, like, there's so many scenarios that could happen right now. It's kind of crazy.
And you have to think about it. Like, Alabama's loss came to Texas A&M.
Yeah, it's not a good loss. And, like, last week, I know it's a rivalry game and everything, but they went to
Auburn
overtime
game. Yeah,
against
Auburn
a 6-6 Auburn team.
Like, that game was not a good showing for them.
They weren't looking good at all.
And I know the committee loves Alabama.
And
right?
SEC,
But honestly, if you lose to Georgia after losing to Texas Tech, and you have or A&M, and then you have that rough game against Auburn, I don't know. Cincinnati's looked so good, and OSU has looked so good, but
yeah,
it's gonna be a really interesting week, and I'm very excited to see how the college football rankings shake up. But that's all the time we've got. I wish we could talk about NCAA football for the next 3 hours, but when we come back, we're gonna try. Successfully or not, we are going to try to phone into West Lafayette and hear from our very good friend, our close personal friend, Leo Stauder, who's getting ready to watch the Birds pound some Purdue Boilermakers. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
You heard her, Katie Weimerskirch. She's in West Lafayette, Indiana right now with the rest of the volleyball team getting ready to take on the number 4-ranked Purdue Boilermakers. Number 6, my apologies. The number 6-ranked Purdue Boilermakers in the NCAA tournament, the Redbirds' 4th straight appearance. We're going to hear from the boys as soon as this match before them concludes. Dayton is leading Marquette 23-20 in the 4th set right now, but we can't talk to the boys who are there until that's over. So it's me and Joe, and we've got a good friend of ours, Blake Hornstein, in the studio as well. Blake, from what I understand, you talked to Coach Leah Johnson earlier, and you kind of gauged where this team was at heading into the tournament.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thanks for having me on again. You know, I know this isn't the way we intended things to go, but hey,
we detoured. We had to figure things out. Blake's here anyway.
Blake was just hanging out.
Blake's just vibing down here anyway.
The studio for the Red Zone now has just become a place where people come and hang out.
We got alumni down here,
We've got former promotions director Adrian Mycor. We've got news and sports operations director Mertz Navarro Lopez. It's a fun time, but But right now, we're here with Blake. So, Blake, you talked to Coach Johnson earlier. How did she say the team was feeling? What did you gauge from her?
Yeah, and I think what was most interesting from talking to Leah was that it was a little bit of a different vibe for her, because this, to her, felt like she had been there before. She was more relaxed this time. Mm-hmm. She talked about how she understood how the process went, how you're going into a hostile environment. The crowd's different. The environment's different. And the intensity is just a whole new level, right? And yeah. She mentioned, like, it's going to be an underdog type of game for the Redbirds. This is not conference play where they feel like they should be the favorites in every game. They kind of accepted the fact that going to have to be underdogs. But talking to Leah, she's like, I just don't want my players to lose their confidence. I want them to play with that nothing to lose mentality, but to maintain their poise as well. So to not really, again, fold under that pressure, and to maintain, again, just a level of, hey, we should be here. We've done this before. We're a great team, and we are more than capable of playing like it.
And this is a great team, but this is the second year in a row now that they've drawn kind of a tough matchup straight out of the gate. And not only is this a tough matchup, they're going against Purdue. At Purdue. So, like, right now, like I mentioned, we've got Marquette and Dayton playing in the game before, but it's Dayton from Ohio, Marquette from Wisconsin. You've got Illinois State going up against Purdue.
Yeah.
In Purdue. It's a really tough draw.
And the thing is, like, the crowd there is probably going to be crazy, because they're in a gym that's only meant for volleyball. So it's a little bit of a smaller gym, I would say. So the noise level is going to be up there. And this is a Big Ten volleyball school who's ranked sixth in the country, with a team that is capable of going to the Final Four in this whole entire tournament. So you know there's going to be a whole entire crowd there. So the Redbirds, I'm not sure if they're used to that. I mean, I don't know if they've been into a crowd like this. So hopefully the moment isn't just too big and they can just stay competitive and... who knows?
And the atmosphere at Holloway Gym, where the Boilermakers play volleyball, is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you said, it's like, it's not necessarily smaller, it's just more compact.
Mm-hmm,
so
definitely.
When you're playing volleyball at Redbird Arena, you have a lot of space in the wings before you have fans on top of you. Holloway Gym, you have fans just sitting right on top of you, almost the way that, like, a high school gymnasium, the bleachers are right there.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to be dealing with all of those Purdue fans right on top of you. It's going to be crazy, but it's not like this team hasn't faced pressure before. They started off this season with a couple big matches that they fell in. They lost to Illinois 3-0. They lost to Missouri 3-2. Like, there were some
That Missouri one was bad.
They lost at Drake 3-0. And then they lost to Evansville 3-0. But then over the course of the season, this team just kind of figured it out and only lost a couple games down the stretch. They took care of business in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, beating Loyola after going down two sets to nothing. So, Blake, did you talk to Coach Johnson at all about that win and how that felt in the moment?
Sure. And Joe, you mentioned a great point. This team has changed so much over the course of the season. What Coach Johnson told me was that they were actually trying to figure out what position certain players should play. So you go and you're facing these non-conference teams, or they're playing their fifth years, who have been there for gosh knows how long. Like, it's obvious that there's going to be growing pains and struggles, but she is really proud of how this team has grown exponentially. And again, to this point, this is a very young team. This is the youngest team in the Missouri Valley Conference, and they ended up winning the tournament, right? So, and again, but Leah has been there before. Yeah. Sarah Kushner has been there before. Kaylin Prodzinski, a second-year player, won the MVP of the tournament. Aaliyah Moore, a freshman, was second in kills on the Redbirds.
Yeah.
So it's not like this team can get that boost from the younger players, but they also have the MVP of the conference in Tamara Otene as well. This Redbird team, again, they've continued to get better every single match, and they have this fight, this determination, this resilience that is the mark of a champion.
And so do you think that the youth on this team has contributed to some of this success? Because we saw they had so many great players in previous years. This year, I remember when we were talking about it at one of the Red Zones beginning of the season, we were concerned because we're like, okay, we don't really know how this team is going to shape up. Do you think that youth is kind of playing a part in how well this team is performing, because they kind of molded?
I definitely do. I mean, Aaliyah Moore, just watching her develop from that first weekend where we were here against Illinois, Missouri, and North Texas, I believe all of those teams were tournament teams. Even though the Redbirds didn't get the dub in those, I mean, you saw Aaliyah Moore just become a better player. And then Loeffler, who was out for a lot of last year, and even this year was out a couple of games. Just the young core of this team. I mean, Aaliyah Moore had 16 kills and 5 blocks in that game against Loyola Chicago, and that's just a freshman doing that. That's more blocks than Sarah Kushner, or more kills than Sarah Kushner had in that game. So I'm seeing that these young players are still capable of putting up performances that are just as good as some of the star players that have been here for a while.
You talk about their performance. What really their role is on this team is to help take the pressure off of the top two outside hitters in Tamara Otene and Sarah Kushner, because that's where the attention's going on offense. The defense knows how great those two players are. Tamara Otene, Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year, Kushner, NBC All-First Team Player. It's on the young players to help take the pressure off of those players, because Coach talked about it. Loyola figured out Tamara Otene in that first set. She only had one kill, and for a player that great, you just don't expect that to happen. So it was up to those younger players to, again, step in. They're going to get better looks than the best players. Go ahead, Joe.
But you also got to remember that Tamara Otene pretty much is a younger player, and she's already one of the best players, probably the best player in the conference, and one of the best players in the whole entire NCAA, ranking 20th in the whole entire country with kills, and then her kill percentage was also in the top 25, and also with total points this season. So, I mean, she's top 25 in national categories, and she didn't really play much last year, and this year, she just came out of nowhere. I mean, I remember just watching, I'm like, wow, I didn't know someone could hit a ball that hard into the ground. I was kind of scared from it.
So heading into this game against Purdue, we talked about the youth on this team, how that's played a part in their some of their early failures and some of their more recent successes. What are you expecting to see? Somebody who's been around this team all season, what do you expect to see against a team the caliber of Purdue?
Well, what ISU has struggled with, and to their credit, they have gotten better. They've struggled when they play really good middles because they're still trying to figure out what their identity is at the front. They lost Sidney Holt last season, massive loss. And actually, Coach Leah Johnson talked about in recruiting last season, she offered every player to come back, but she really emphasized to keep Sidney Holt because she knew how much they would probably struggle up front. Nicole Lund has played well. Cassie Jordan has played well. Purdue's got some really good middles of their own. I really hope that ISU can, again, work on shading that coverage, work towards preventing a middle from taking over and really dominating a game, because they've shown that they can defend both the outside and the right sides of the court really well. Katie Weimerskirch in the back row has been so consistent. Carly Nicholson as well. And I'll tell you what, guys, Nora Janka. Coach Johnson could not talk enough about how Nora Janka has become such a
just a rock. Like for all a the staple?
Other. There you
a
go.
A staple in the team.
Thanks, Joey. Always coming up with the words that I need.
You know I got you.
Joey's always got you. I definitely see that. Yeah, I mean, like, at first she was really only used as, like, a serving specialist, and recently she's been putting up on the court more, and so it's been good to see her get more of that playing time.
Illinois State Volleyball taking on number 6th in the nation, Purdue. That game was scheduled to start at 6. It'll be a little bit later because of that game before it ran long. But when we come back, hopefully we're going to be talking to the men we've got at the arena. So stick around. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the studio here at 103.3 WZND. You're listening to the Red Zone. Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and Blake Hornstein with you right now. We're still waiting to get connected with the guys over in West Lafayette as they prepare for the Illinois State Redbirds to take on the Purdue Boilermakers. So while we've got the time, we weren't able to touch on it in the last segment, but we alluded to the fact that this Purdue volleyball team, they're 6th in the nation, and that's pretty good.
Yeah.
This is it's a tough draw for the Redbirds, and they are historically just kind of screwed over. But this team is very, very good.
That's kind of what happens, though. I mean, you're a group of five conference, not a power five conference, so you're going to be put into these games against teams that are going to be top 10 in the country. And Purdue, they're firing on all cylinders right now. They're hot. They're won nine out of their last 10 matches they've won, and they've played in 15 matches versus teams that were ranked or that were received ranks in the voting in the top 25, and they know 7-4 on the season in that. So they had some big wins against Washington State, UNLV, and then in the Big Ten too as well. They beat Penn State and Wisconsin, who at the time was number 3 in the nation. So, I mean, they got big wins against big teams.
And they've been playing really well. And a lot of it has to do with one of their outside hitters, Caitlin Newton. Newton was a senior last year. She's taking advantage of that extra year of eligibility from COVID, and she has been a rock in this front line of the Boilermakers. She's got 421 kills on the season. She's averaging just under 4 kills a set. It has been an incredible season for her, and she has really led this Boilermaker squad. Her and Grace Cleveland up at front have been unreal.
Yeah. And Joey, just to put in perspective how difficult of a challenge this is, last season when the Redbirds won the conference championship and they had a number of great seniors contributing, that was again like a true favorite, just a team that really dominated conference play all season long. And then they got matched up with UNLV, and they just couldn't compete with them.
Yeah.
So just to put into perspective, now you're facing the 6th best team in the country. This is no joke. I mean, this
and you're at Purdue, too. I mean, last year there wasn't any fans, and, like, now you're at Purdue in one of the most hostile environments in the Big Ten, maybe even the country.
Yeah, but again, just to put that in perspective, this is a great team. It's going to take, I'm not going to say a miracle, because anything can happen. It's sports, and it's college sports, for crying out loud. Anything can happen. But again, taking a look at the Boilermakers, I mean, they are 2nd in the nation in blocks per set with 2.99. Again, I talked about how the Redbirds would struggle with middles and the front line. That's definitely going to be a concern. They're only trailing Maryland, who ranks 3rd in total blocks. And again, you talked about Caitlin Newton. I think of somebody like Grace Cleveland as well. So you not just have Caitlin Newton, but you also have Grace Cleveland taking the pressure, so the Redbirds can't just focus all their coverage on Newton, Joe.
And you're talking about those blocks, Blake. I'm pretty sure they have two players that are very, very tall, 6'8", I believe, at the moment. And so that's going to be a big problem, because Illinois State, you don't see that type of height, really. I mean, the Redbirds, they're lucky. They kind of did see a team that's very similar in Purdue and Illinois, and Illinois actually did knock off Purdue earlier in the season. So, I mean, they've played a team that's beaten the Boilermakers, so maybe that gives them a little preview of how this game might go and what they might have to do in order to win.
And they've got Taylor Trammell, who is 4th in the NCAA in blocks per set with 1.6, and then the Boilermakers are 4th in blocks per set this season. So they have just been really just incredible on defense, and then their offense, like we were saying earlier, Blake, is just top notch as well.
And they have the experience too. Like, this Illinois State team, they didn't really have as much experience as in years past. Purdue's not only one of the most experienced teams in the Big Ten with 13 players having at least 2 years of experience, and that's over like about 61%, but also the largest roster in program history. So this is a deep team that has all these players that have been putting in a lot of time in this program, one of them being Haley Bush, one of the most dynamic setters in all of Division I, who's among 8th among active players in career assist per set and total assist. So they got these players that have been there for a long time, that have known each other and playing with each other for over 2 years now.
And I think about somebody like Dave Shondell, the head coach of the Boilermakers. I love to talk about how Leah has just such a great way of instilling a culture and leading a champion with not just her presence, but just everything that she does. This guy, Dave Shondell, has been to the Big Dance 16 times, and he owns a 27-15 record. So he doesn't just get to these games, he wins them.
Yeah.
And the Redbirds have not won one in a very long time. So it's going to feel like everything's going to have to go the Redbirds' way. Can't have any miscommunications passing. Can't have any silly serves over the back line or into the net. Again, this is going to have to be the best game ISU has played in quite a long time, Joey.
And you know that we are all Redbird faithful here, and we want nothing but the best for this ISU team. So, Blake, you alluded to it. This has to be the best game that ISU has played all season. No holds barred. They have to be able to come out hot. Like, they were able to come back against Loyola because they are a better team than the Ramblers. I don't want to say that they're not a better team than the Boilermakers, but the Boilermakers just have all of these players who are so great that it's going to take everyone on Illinois State at their very best to win this match tonight.
And they again, they've shown that they can step up to the challenge, Joey. They've done it before. They can do it again. We've seen the progression over the course of the season. Coach talked about it. Just play with confidence. So, I don't, Joe, if you have a key to the game, mine is going to be what Leah told me. Play with the nothing to lose mentality and maintain your confidence.
I think Coach's key to the game is going to be it's all going to come down to the front of the net, because Purdue just in front of the net is just one of the best in the country. So if the Redbirds are able to not, I'm not expecting them to win in front of the net every single time, but if they can get here and there, maybe, you know, Illinois State, they love doing that little slight touch over the net where they kind of fake that they're going to hit a kill from up top. They just a little bloop over the net. If they can get some of those thrown in there, maybe some interesting things can happen.
Pay homage to Snake Eyes Steph Jankowicz.
Yeah. Doing that.
Exactly. So it'll be an incredible match. We're going to have it for you here. As soon as we get the boys connected, they're having a little bit of difficulty, but that's going to wrap up our show. We're wrapping it a little early so we can help those guys out. Thank you so much for listening. We talked. We did a lot, you know? We did a lot. You've truly been listening to the Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy show.
The Joe Show, baby.
It's the Joe Show. We had NCAA basketball. We talked about the Big Ten ACC Challenge. We talked about the Redbirds being a contender in the NBC.
Could they be?
What?
I mean,
what? Then after that, we talked about NCAA football. Then we talked a lot of Redbirds volleyball, and we are very excited for this game to get started. If you missed any part of tonight's show, head on over to WZND.com. We're going to have it up there in podcast form as soon as we can, as soon as Joe gets the flash drive out of the computer and into the other one. Thank you so much to Blake Hornstein for coming on short notice and really helping us out. And you had some valuable insight. For Joe Kennedy, I'm Joey Dwyer. Have a great night. Make sure you stay tuned for Illinois State volleyball against Purdue coming up right after this.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.